Ever since September 11th, we've been checking in from time to time with Dr. Robert J. Lifton, a psychiatrist who's an expert on extremist religions, cult groups, and the appeal of apocalyptic thinking. He's also written about global terrorism and the psychological impact of living in an age of nuclear weapons. Dr. Lifton is currently a visiting professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. We called him to see what he's thinking as America marches toward war. He says he's concerned that if we launch a preemptive military strike on Iraq, we'll be breaking a taboo against attacking a country that hasn't attacked us first. I asked him to explain his concern.
Restraints in international behavior are not always adhered to, but they're very important to try to keep in place. And one taboo, which is a very important restraint, is against attacking a country when you yourself have not been attacked. In that sense, the new American doctrine of preemptive warfare, if carried out in Iraq, would be the breaking down of a very major taboo. And that would encourage and, to a degree, legitimate breaking down taboos on the part of others. And it could very well bring about more sympathy for terrorism, which is also a violation of a taboo against civilians and people who aren't militarily concerned as victims, but that too would be a breaking of a taboo, which would have more support because we ourselves are initiating that violation of taboos. And another possible consequence here could be the use of nuclear weapons, which is the greatest and most important taboo, on the part of one of many different countries.
For years, you've been studying the psychological impact of living in a world with nuclear weapons. You started this kind of study during the Cold War. Now we're living in a post-Cold War world where we're worried about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction, and at the same time, we're worried about North Korea starting to build nuclear weapons and possibly even give nuclear weapons to other countries or to terrorist groups. And I'm wondering how your thinking is changing as the world situation is changing.
Well, there's still a very grave danger of the use of nuclear weapons, and in fact, that danger is increasing. Before, during the Cold War, we had to be concerned with very large hydrogen bombs in the hands of the two superpowers, one superpower threatening to use it against another, with a real danger of destroying much of the world. Now the danger has shifted more toward relatively smaller nuclear weapons, the so-called Hiroshima temptation, which could be to use a weapon, a nuclear weapon, against a country that doesn't possess them. But the danger of any regional conflict escalating to a nuclear conflict, and that's a real possibility right now. If we attack Iraq, there's a danger that Iraq will respond with some use of weapons of mass destruction. It could be biological or chemical, and there's a danger that Israel may use a nuclear weapon. There's a danger that we, the United States, will use a nuclear weapon, as we've threatened to do, should Iraq or anyone else use weapons of mass destruction. And whenever you escalate violence in a very intense way, the nuclear option is thought about by certain powers who are involved, and you create the danger of what I call an atrocity-producing situation where a group of people feel impelled to use a nuclear weapon.
So do you find yourself being more worried about the use of nuclear weapons now than you've ever been before?
I am more worried about the use of nuclear weapons now in the post-Cold War era than ever before, because on the one hand, we should be grateful that the Cold War dangers of almost complete world destruction have ameliorated in some degree. But on the other hand, with nuclear proliferation and with what I call trickle-down nuclearism, the nuclear weapons-related passions now affecting smaller and smaller groups, including non-governmental groups Bin Laden or even Aum Shinrikyo, this increases the danger of the use of a smaller nuclear weapon. And there also are unaccounted for nuclear weapons in the countries of the former Soviet Union, so that all in all, most observers would feel that the danger of nuclear warfare is greater than before, and we have to always be cognizant of that.
One of the things you've thought about a lot is what does it take for a leader to say, yes, it's justified to use a nuclear weapon. And do you think that that sense of what would make use of a nuclear weapon justifiable has changed?
Well, it has in certain ways, because one very important matter is how much you consider the use of nuclear weapons crossing a dangerous threshold, or alternatively, how much you consider it just another weapon. And unfortunately, this administration, our present administration, has really opted for the latter. They've talked about nuclear weapons as though they were just other weapons, and they've talked about more creative uses of nuclear weapons, for instance, underground uses to attack underground caves or whatever, so that rather than seeing that as a very important threshold to keep as a barrier, we've taken the opposite view of rendering the weapons ordinary and normalizing them and really engaging rhetoric that eases their use. So prior rhetoric, prior policy that justifies and encourages their use on the one hand can combine on the other with a sense of national emergency or threat to so-called national security, and that can be a combination that can lead to their use. We have to start talking and thinking about these things right now before they actually happen.
You've studied the mindset of cult group leaders and terrorists. The Bush administration is making connections between Islamic fundamentalist terrorists and the Iraq regime led by Saddam Hussein. But you've suggested that if we attack Saddam Hussein, it might actually please bin Laden, assuming bin Laden's still alive. But make that case for us.
Well, a terrorist like bin Laden thrives on chaos. I think if I were bin Laden, I'd welcome an American invasion of Iraq, because that would intensify chaos. It would create something closer to an apocalyptic situation, the use of high-tech weapons, the anger of much of the Islamic world over this use of that weaponry on an Islamic country. All this would be in the direction that bin Laden seeks, and he would emerge from it stronger, with more appeal, and with better recruiting possibilities.
You were telling me that the head of Aum Shinrikyo, the Japanese cult group that was responsible for the gas attack in the Japanese subway, that he was thrilled by the Gulf War. Why?
That's right. Asahara was thrilled by the Gulf War. On the one, he had a kind of ambivalence. On the one hand, he identified with Saddam and thought that this was another example of American aggression toward a non-white country. But on the other hand, he was very excited by the high-tech weapons that America was using in that Gulf War, because they seemed to be a harbinger of Armageddon, and Armageddon was what he sought. And that's a kind of parallel to what I'm suggesting with bin Laden.
I think the shuttle disaster has happened at a time when people's emotions are still very raw because of September 11th and fear of terrorism. Do you think that Americans' grief over the shuttle disaster was deepened by post-September 11th fear and anxiety?
I think it certainly has been. Certainly, the American reaction would be very strong under any conditions, because rendering human these astronauts and their appealing kind of human quality is enough to move the country. But having said that, I think Americans are uneasy and agitated over fear of terrorism and fear of recurrence of terrorist acts, and also over what is immediately happening now in terms of the danger of an American attack on Iraq and what that means for us and what it means for further terrorism in the world. All of these things lead to not only uneasiness but anxiety and intensified grief and fear of loss.
Do you think that that connects to the amount of coverage that the shuttle disaster has been given in the media and the the desire of many Americans to stick with it and to just to kind of keep with that disaster and keep learning as much as they can about it.
To some extent, as painful as the whole shuttle disaster has been, there's some comfort derived by public expressions of grief and some degree of satisfaction in doing that. Sustained coverage of that grief and of the events surrounding the disaster may have the effect of warding off the more difficult questions, the more troubling issues involving the possible invasion of Iraq and the possible intensification of terror that that invasion could bring about.
You mean because with the shuttle we're not looking at terrorism, we're looking at something mechanical, something in the structure of the shuttle that went wrong. We don't know exactly what that is yet, but it's not morally ambiguous.
Well, the hope is that we can uncover the technological source of the shuttle disaster and in that sense deal with the problem. That may be too simply stated because the problems are vast and there are issues about human beings in space that many people are raising. But all of this has a certain straightforward quality as compared to the unknowns of an attack on Iraq and the responses of the Islamic world to such an attack. The latter, the attack on Iraq, is a matter of a very painful and dubious decision as opposed to the focus on the shuttle disaster, which at least brings the country together in shared pain.
As opposed to the division over whether we should invade Iraq.
That's right. Invading Iraq divides the country in the most extreme way, and there are voices on all sides, all of which claim to see things clearly, and everybody perceives dangers. It was rather interesting in one recent news article that one of the people most involved with being an architect for the attack on Iraq called back the interviewer, or told the interviewer, that he has sleepless nights worrying about what I've been calling unintended consequences. That is, that certain things would happen, including further terrorism or the use of some kind of dirty bomb on an American city as a result of an attack on Iraq. So that there's a lot of unease about what looks like a presidential policy.
As a psychiatrist, I'm wondering if you've been thinking a lot about Saddam Hussein's personality and how well balanced he actually is.
It's very hard to project future events on the basis of the personality, even of demagogic figures like Saddam Hussein. He has shown so many different characteristics, including wild destructiveness, very canny capacity for survival, responsiveness to deterrence, very bad judgment in relation to his own self-interest. He's shown all of those things. Perhaps the lesson should be that we can't predict his exact behavior or that of Iraq in general should we attack that country. And any policy that's based upon an assumption that he'll behave in a particular way, particularly, especially if that's a way that we want him to behave, is really ill-advised.
Dr. Lifton, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert J. Lifton is currently a visiting professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. His latest book is Destroying the World to Save It, Om Shinrikyo, Apocalyptic Violence and the New Global Terrorism. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.